Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, 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 everybody. This is Adam Murciano. I play Declan Walters on Cascadia.
My name is Antonio Cordero. I directed, co-produced, and wrote, and co-wrote as Cascadia.
Yes, and this episode's a little different than all the other episodes. This is going to be more of a sit down and get to know us and how we made this show. It's going to be a behind-the-scenes look. Everything from writing to casting to recording to re-recording to marketing and releasing and just the whole process. We're going to be talking. It's a wild ride.
Buckle up.
And get ready to dive into this because we're going to be discussing a lot.
I was holding back my dive references. Don't say anything.
So, okay. So do you remember how this all started, Antonio? Do you remember when I came to you with this idea and how this all begun? Because I do.
Yes, yes. Okay, so my recollection is that you came to me in the midst of a pandemic wanting to do something. Wait, hold on. Was this just before the pandemic or was it right at the beginning? I think it was right at the beginning of the pandemic, right?
I don't know when. No, it would have been in the middle of the pandemic because I had other ideas.
Yes.
At the beginning of the pandemic for other shows. Yep. So it would have been in the middle of this. Actually, it would have been near like the end of 2020.
Yeah, I remember we were I had just finished finishing another project, and then this kind of you kind of came to me with this, and yeah. I remember we didn't exactly sit down and write the rest of the episodes together. I remember we did this almost exclusively remotely until we started recording in studio.
Yes, which we'll get to all of that. That was a whole mess, but I guess basically I'll tell you from my end and then how I approached you with it. Yeah. So 2020 hit. It was like the worst year for a lot of actors because, you know, you couldn't work.
Yeah, you can't wear a mask when you're acting on screen and for most projects.
And so I was stuck at home and I had no idea what to do with myself. I was so bored. I was so creatively frustrated that I was like, you know, I've always wanted to actually write a fictional podcast series. I've known about this genre of podcasting for maybe 6-7 years now, but I was always too nervous to do it, or I never really knew how it would work. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm going to just jump into it and do it. But I've never really written anything before. I've never really done anything like this before of my own. So I was just like spending a lot of the quarantine, like writing a bunch of different pilot episodes for things. Like I came up with different concepts and different ideas. And Cascadia was one of the pilots that I wrote, and it was not even, I didn't even write it. It started off with a concept. It was the one scene of Declan, and I had a vision of this underwater deep sea diving guy with an alien. Yep. And the reason,
you sent me an image. I remember now. Yeah, I remember the picture you sent me. I was like, whoa.
Exactly. I actually saw the image on Instagram. It was an Instagram. I followed this deep sea account with like, it was like a graphics account, and I saw this one image of this deep sea guy who was just standing there underwater with an alien, and the only caption on it said alone, and that was actually the original title of our show for the longest time. Alone. It was called Alone, and I was so inspired by that photo that I was like, I want to create something that was very like one man show because it was only me. I was stuck alone and I had nothing else. You know, I didn't have other actors. And I was like, okay, well, I can like edit and distort my voice to be an alien, so I could play the alien and I could play the deep sea guy character. And I just didn't know. I quickly realized that that wasn't, there was no plot to that. It was hard to just kind of.
Well, it was the start. I remember you came to me and you told me about you and your friend Hannah having this talk at a party, and you had a part of this developed at the time. You talked to her about it, and then you guys kind of riffed about it being like an underwater exploration of some kind, and like there were subs involved, and the creature was big, and all this, and then we had like a crew of some sort, but I remember the parts about Badger Maria and all that happened as we were basically writing those first initial three episodes. It was like just the focus of this strange creature in this deep ocean area we didn't know where.
We had no idea.
And then then the story basically started to reveal ourselves once we focused in on the characters like Aaliyah and Declan. And
right. Yeah. It was so crazy how it, like, I say the show wrote itself, but yeah, basically exactly what you said, like a few days later I ran into you and we were talking about, you know, the idea, and I said, would you be interested in directing this? And you said,
yes,
like you were writing your own thing, and you're like, yeah, sure, like I'd be down. But I don't think you were thinking maybe I was fully serious. I've never done anything
I didn't know the scale of like where this would go at that point for sure. I was like, an audio drama, I've never done one of those. I was mostly into like doing film and directing on set stuff, and I was like, okay, I would love this challenge. Like, it'd be interesting to do something where I could only communicate through one medium, which is sound.
Yes.
And with the technology that was coming out with, you know, binaural elements and like what you can do with sound really is what sold me. I was like,
right.
And then I obviously heard some, I already heard some other audio dramas, and I was like, this is a whole new world.
Yeah.
It felt really fresh.
Yeah. I sent you a bunch of shows that I was listening to and I said, hey, just check these out. This is the vibe I wanted. And you're like, let's do this. And so, yeah, we started writing, and I remember just writing and writing and writing a bajillion drafts. It was like, I remember you were
there,
like,
there was lots of drafts. Yeah. Up until the recording, basically, because we had some rewrites, and the story just kept speaking to us. I really felt
totally.
That with this project. I was like, these characters are telling me what to do next here. And like right up until the finale, like we let the characters tell us, and I feel like that has been a blessing and also a little challenging, because
it's
like things are moving so quick, and I was like, okay, we gotta make sure the continuity is matching with this, and like piecing it all together.
I mean, I don't know if you remember, but originally, so the whole show was actually supposed to be like an anthology. We were supposed to have different, completely different episodes of different shows, and we actually wrote the first two episodes as one episode, and that was going to be the whole show, but then it just didn't feel finished. It wasn't finished. It wasn't done, and it felt like there was so much more depth to it, to the characters, to this, to that, and we could actually build a whole show around it. And I told you, I said, hey, like, why don't we just scrap the whole anthology idea, and let's just run with this and make this a full developed show? And you said, of course.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah, it really became a thing in itself, and I remember thinking that in the moment, I was like, well, this is going to, this is going to be a huge project. I was excited.
I mean, it passed the time for quarantine for sure. We were just working on it every day.
Yeah, we were busy.
And then I'll never forget, I was walking home one day, and this would have been like in the spring of 2021, and whole Maria and Badger so at this point, we already had the first two episodes done. We had maybe the first bit of episode three done with the whole like perspective of the crew when the submarine attacks.
That was drafted in the
and we were just in the middle of writing it, and I was just like, well, we didn't really know where it was gonna go. We had no idea. We were like it can go anywhere, I guess, you know. We knew that there was gonna be some kind of alien life, because like I said, that was the original concept of the whole show, that whole scene.
But so, we knew there had to be more like drama and like the human element of it, and like there
totally.
Needed to be something that not only the audience can relate to, but like a force bigger than just what was there, what they were going to.
And I will never forget exactly where I was. I was walking home, and it hit me. The Maria and Badger storyline, the whole plot twist there. I was like, this was right in front of us the entire time. And I'll never forget, Antonio, I called you. I'm like, do you have a moment to speak? You're like, yeah, what's up? And I called you, and I'll never forget sitting on the park bench, and I was just telling you the whole that whole breakdown of it, and you were like adding on to it, and we were both having this like euphoric
riffing
moment.
It,
and we were freaking out. And then everything kind of wrote itself after that. We were just kind of off to the races for the last three episodes, and it was so much fun. We really were just having the best time coming up with this idea, and the fun part of it was that it was sci-fi, and we can go anywhere and do whatever, and we can kind of just, you know, things might not make sense fully, but it was like, it was sci-fi, so, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you're on this
ride. Just having fun, truthfully. Yeah, exactly.
How did you come up with, because we named it Alone for the longest time, and again, it was based on like Declan being alone, both, you know, in his captain journey and feeling alone against the crew, and literally being alone at the bottom of the ocean. That was the whole title of the show. But Antonio, you came to me one day and you were like, why don't we just name it Cascadia? How did you come up with that name? Like, I don't think I've ever actually really asked you this.
Yeah, no, Cascadia came from just the destination. We were nondescript with where this dive was going to take place, just in the Pacific somewhere. And then the idea of going deeper than what was already existing lowest depths, which is like the Marianas Trench in real life, it's like something has to happen where a new Earth is revealed in some way, and the Cascadia subduction zone was proximal to where we were. I know the physics of it didn't exactly mean opening when things happened, but the name Cascadia came from the Cascadia subduction zone, and like, that's where they were, and that's where this whole drama unfolds.
Did you do any research when you were writing for this? Because I know I did a little bit. I mean, I did I did some stuff, but for me, at least for me, I didn't want it to be super technical heavy with
the
submarine.
No, definitely not. Yeah, it needed the balance. Yeah,
I wanted some stuff, of course, but I didn't want it to be so like technical that people just tune out and not know, because the average person doesn't know the technicalities of a submarine.
I don't know what a double liner is. I just came up with a double something that would, you know, like a like an airbag system is what I was thinking. Like, you know, when you get in a crash, you have an airbag. So maybe this sub has some sort of like pressurized airbag. Right. So when the hull starts to crack and there's pressure that would basically, you know, compromise anything else.
Of course.
This special sub has something to protect it. And maybe that's the little stilts that the whole crew been standing on since, because the sub was supposed to fail basically when they got down there. But it didn't for some reason. So maybe this double safety net layer has been what's kept them intact the whole
time. And this is a sci-fi show, and this was taking place in a little bit in the future. So, you know, things could be different. And this Alexandria submarine was custom made. So we were able to get away with certain things like that because...
Right? Suspend belief.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Let reality catch up, because it does take place in the future. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But you did some research because you were looking up Cascadia.
Yep. And that's when I really was started to like think about any sort of technical stuff, was when I was like, okay, let's look deeper into, no pun intended, into sub technology, into where people have been and like where we could go, because I wanted to now put the geography to the whole expedition, the whole odyssey. And yeah, obviously that's where I came up with the Cascadia title, and other parts of the sub, like we talked about.
Yeah. I mean, thank God for you, because I'm not really good with all that technical stuff and even just like researching deep
sea
stuff.
Neither am I. I did my best, but I was like, for the people that are going to be bothered by the smallest thing that's incorrect, I was like, obviously we suspend belief for stories, but I didn't want to sound silly. Like,
No, it had to be correct.
Stuff and like, exactly.
Yeah. I definitely wanted to be...
I researched the earthquake for sure.
Of course, yeah. And I wanted to be like factually correct with certain things, but I thought certain like... technical stuff about like submarines, like because it's such a customized submarine, we can like get away with it. Do you remember writing the finale, the season one finale?
I remember rewriting it in studio, because I think it was right on the heels of episode 4, because they tie in together really, or at least when we wrote the first draft episode 4, they tied in together. And I remember we went over the logistics of it, and we're like, okay, there's a lot of things that have to happen for them to kill this colossal squid that's from an alien planet. So how do we coordinate this without the visual and without getting everyone confused? And I think going through the plan the way we did was the best way, because when everything's happening, you have to remember the plan, because you're just hearing cues like, okay, got him captured. And like to see that, it's like, I like that we had that speech from Ozzo and him telling us the tools and having that kind of preemptive thing before the plan, before the execution of plan. So it's like a 3-stage finale.
And I remember it was very like, we were just sitting there kind of like, it was technically very difficult, because again, like you said, how are we going to tell this and like show this kind of action sequence without, because we don't have the visual medium, so we had to figure out a way to like, and I just remember thinking like, we need to simplify this as much as possible, because if it gets too technical, people are gonna get confused and they're gonna tune
lost
out
in the words for sure.
You know, we just boom 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 and 3-step plan, like you said. And so that's kind of what we did, and I mean, I hope we did a good job with that. But the last
three different contexts too, so like they're all in different places for the parts of the plan too.
Exactly. And so it was, we wanted to hammer that in and really just kind of have a edit it as a sequence kind of thing. But I remember we wrote alternate endings, because we weren't sure, even up until the week of releasing the finale, we were like, I called you, said, so how are we going to end the show?
What do we do? Yeah, which one do we go? But that was possible. That was possible because of audio, truthfully.
Yeah.
We could do that. In film, that's like a whole setup. And like, this was the best part of audio. It's like, you can really explore the story in ways you can't really with film.
Totally. And we were like, do they all die in the end, or does he get saved? Because we recorded a version where he actually also gives him the harpoon, and he actually punctures the harpoon, and he gets sent back to the sub. And there was going to be maybe and maybe we were going to do some kind of like news report sequence where they reported that they all made it to shore and stuff. But
Maria and Walt and Badger were going to get arrested at like the landing because it was the plan was that Conrad had not told them yet, right? And the reason why we ended up, well, at least partly part of the reason we ended up going with the ending we did is because we advanced that to the FBI busting them at the Institute and Conrad releasing the story because we had that conversation with Holden and the voicemail to Lila.
Right. So that was going to be the original ending, but it didn't feel right. It didn't feel that. And if we end up going with a season two, this will all kind of mix into one. I'm not giving anything away. Yeah. But if we don't end up going with season two, this is also an ending too. And
beautiful ending, if you ask me. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether if they survived or not, that's totally up to you. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's just a one.
Because I think a lot of people would default to, okay, Declan dies with Ozzo because the bomb went off and they didn't get away.
Right.
And the crew hopefully made it to shore.
Right.
But we don't even know that. That's not even for certain. About that. What if the bomb went off in a horizontal trajectory and cut them out too?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's an alien bomb. We have no idea.
We have no idea. Do you know how many fucking text messages I got saying, how dare you end the show like this? And I'm like, sorry.
Really?
So many people were like, are you kidding me? Like, that's it? Like, I need to know what happened. And I'm like, if we do season two, it'll all make sense, I promise.
Yes.
Which I really want to do. But
it's gotta be right. It's gotta be, the story's gotta go in the right direction. And I think we've teed it up for the potential of season two. Like, the story is there if we decide to dive back in to Cascadia season two, which, if you ask me, I would love to do it.
Yes. Leave us a little comment if you want a season two. And we'll see.
People have asked me about it as well, and I have not responded fully and truthfully about it because I wanted this season one to finish.
Of course.
Like, let's season one finish. Yeah. Let's see where we're at. Let's see what the audience wants and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, I've been getting so many people asking me about it and I'm just like, I literally just finished editing the last episode.
Right?
Give me a minute. Yeah, I just shaved my beard. Even the Holden and Declan scene, I remember like in the last episode, the Holden and Declan scene about them having the heart-to-heart, that was written...
Yep.
In 10 minutes. I remember we wrote that so quickly. I remember there was
the
something...
The day before we went in for the last recording.
Yep. And I remember there was something... When we originally wrote the script, it wasn't in there. And I was like, there's something missing in this episode. There's something... There's a loose end here.
Holden needed to be tied up, for sure.
Holden needed to be tied up. And again, the whole Badger being the father... Like, stepfather, I guess. Or taking him in. That was all right in front of us the whole time. And we didn't even realize it until we at the end, we were like, oh my God, you know, another aha moment.
And you guys nailed the scene too. I remember we did like three takes. I was like, we got it.
Well, Lee, who is so talented, literally is, you know, the star of that scene. And my jaw was on the floor the whole time. I was like, this is beautiful. You know, he's so talented. So yeah, I mean, that was, I remember writing that and I was just like, that was so cool that we just kind of had this like moment where it just came out, and I think it fits so perfectly in the episode, and I'm so happy that it hit us when it did, because I would have been really sad if we realized this like afterwards. But
I think it buttoned up the good side of the story, the heartfelt sacrifice and the connection that Holden kind of came around to realizing. You know, I really like that for his character, because he was logically apprehensive toward, maybe a little bit over the top.
Yes.
Maybe a little bit too much. Yeah. But he was logically apprehensive to Declan in the first place for a good reason. And then, you know, Declan ultimately proved himself to him with the sacrifice.
I mean, Holden's anger, like, it makes sense. You know, he Badger was like a father to him, and he chooses Declan to be the captain when Holden's
I'm
been...
I'm right here, bro.
Yeah. You know, like, I've been working my ass off my whole life. And, you know, just... It's like all these things that we didn't even think about subconsciously when writing the show. And then it just hit us at the end, which was really cool. And I just, I feel like that was really fun. Do you know any other, character development stuff that you want to mention in the whole thing?
Truthfully, I was thinking about this the other day, and the one character we totally overlooked was Iris.
I know.
Which she doesn't have any sort of personal, but you could argue that for Aaliyah, because the only thing that really happens to her is she starts to... you know, captain the sub, and like she takes a commanding lead. And in the beginning, you could say she was a little bit not naive, but kind of tagged along with Declan and whatever he said. Like, she lies to the crew with him, withholds the vital information of the depth they're at for him. So there's obviously something there. Like, she's the only one that respects him when this whole thing starts.
Right. And actually, that whole storyline ties up too There's a scene that we recorded with Aaliyah in the last episode that we actually didn't include. We're saving it for the Supercut episode, which is going to be an episode that's coming soon, about a month or so, where you can actually listen to all the episodes in one setting, one big episode, essentially. And we're going to include this bonus episode, or this bonus scene, sorry, where it's more of like Aaliyah's tie-up to the whole show. And I think the fans and people who listen to the show are really going to find it special. It's a cute scene.
So I guess the only character we didn't have like such an expansive storyline for was Iris.
Right.
And truthfully, she was the kind of mom of the ship, right? She was the mama bear of all of them, the most experienced diver there. And she has her moment in the sun when she basically saves them from total destruction of the mother Aethelei by releasing the baby Aethelei. I personally love that scene, by the way. And the whole sound design for that with the sub rotating was perfectly done by our post-production team, I gotta say. Shout out to them. AKA Adam.
Thank you. It was hard work. But, you know, Iris, she, you know, I think, she, like you said, she was like the mother of the sub, and she's gone through so many dives that she's already kind of a developed character in herself, you know? But she does have this kind of, like, power struggle of, like, being in the middle, like when everyone's like, we need to ascend, and she's like, okay, fine, like Aaliyah, I'll listen to you, we'll give him one more shot kind of thing, you know, but then also agreeing with Holden, and then, you know, there's times where she's like, Declan, it's okay, like we got to get to the surface, like she's kind of, you're right, like the mother of the whole ship,
she's caught in the middle of everybody, she's totally a
Libra. So I guess that was that, and you know, the whole, like, obviously, Declan's development changed a lot. Our goal with this was, we wanted to start Declan as, you know, everyone hating him and being absolutely erratic and out of his mind.
The most flawed character of all. The protagonist, the guy that was captain of the ship, like, and it kind of left you up to the viewer to decide, who do you like the most? Like, who do you think the story's going to follow? Because we didn't really say who the main was, right? We had Declan as a captain, but that doesn't usually mean anything, right?
And I wanted everyone to hate my character. I usually, the protagonist, like, everyone, you know, is rooting for them and cheering for them and loving them. They're the main character, whatever. But I wanted the main character, quote unquote. I feel like it's more of an ensemble show, but like the main quote unquote character to be the one that everyone hated. But then at the end, root for,
even
you know?
You're like, I'm playing the worst character.
I hated him. I'm like, because like I said, we were writing the show as we were recording it, and I was like, why did I cast myself as the worst fucking character? I hate this character. His decisions suck. Like, I wish I was Holden or something, you know? But like, in the end, we want to turn it to where people actually felt for Declan and actually wanted him to succeed. And yeah, exactly. He was manipulated. And I think that was a really fun character development to play and to write. And
I loved watching that story blossom. And you know, spoiler alert, if you haven't heard, he may or may not have a tragic end, but it was the right way for him, you know? He did have the victory in the end.
So let's talk a little bit about the casting process. Right. I remember, well, first of all, so happy with how our actors turned out and how everything ended up going, but Lee is actually one of my good friends in real life, and he has such a good voice, eh? Such a deep...
He is Holden.
He is Holden. As I was writing the show, and not in a bad way though, Lee is the most funniest, sweetest guy. So, you know, he's not a douche like that. No, but he has the wit, and that's what I wanted, with the Holden wit. And I think that that's what I, you know, when I was writing, I was like, this is perfect. And Lee's one of my best friends in real life. And so I knew I wanted to cast him in this project, but you know, as I was writing, I was like, oh, he's totally Holden. So, you know, that was already kind of there for him. And then Sam Leanna Cole, she plays Iris. I knew her from a few years before, just from the acting scene and just, you know, auditions and this and that. And so, but we were in an acting class together, and I saw her perform every week in the class. And I was like, and I was in the middle of writing this with you. And I was like, wait, she is so good. She's so talented that I was like, I feel like she'd be a perfect Iris. And so I approached her. I was so nervous to ask her because I'm not that close with her, you know, but we, you know, we were friends, but through the industry and stuff. And so I was like,
through class too.
Yeah, through class and stuff. But I was like, would you be interested in, you know, voicing a character on this little podcast that we're doing? You know, like even the concept of explaining it, like people don't really understand what a fictional podcast is. I was kind of nervous to ask her, and like I was like, what if she doesn't understand it? But right away she was so sweet. She's like, absolutely, I'm so down. Like, tell me when. Well, you know, I remember at the early stages, she got a mic for us. Yep, we'll get into that after that. The demos.
Yes,
but she was so on board and she was so excited. And and that was like the funnest and the best thing ever. And then the person who plays Aaliyah was actually another actress originally. She is one of my good friends, and she was going to voice the role of Aaliyah, but the problem was that she was in Ontario,
yeah.
And me and Antonio and the rest of the cast, we're in Vancouver, which yep. is across the country.
Yeah.
And so I had to recast the Aaliyah voice. We auditioned a few actresses, and they were all great, but when I heard Rebecca Kwan, who plays Aaliyah, she just knocked it out of the park, and she was so good in her taping, and I was like, I would love for you to voice her, and she was like, I'm on board. So
yeah, she aced it. I remember that one.
Yeah, we just got everybody in all at once, and it was good. And then for the Maria role, do you remember what we had to do for that? Or
yes, yeah, for Maria, I remember we obviously were trying to get everyone in studio together because the chemistry was just so much better, and we were worried that. We had recorded 3 episodes of Maria by this point, and remotely, given that Declan and Maria are talking remotely the entire time in the episodes so far. And it still worked. I remember it still worked. And I was like, because now she's going to start talking with Badger and, you know, more person to person contact. Do we recast her with someone local or do we try to make it work? And
there it was phone conversations, so it kind of worked.
It worked so far, so it's like we got
that we were two different places. Yeah,
that's right. And then by this point, I think we were like already in studio, and you know, realizing the scope of the work and the timing and the scheduling and a whole bunch of other things. Also, she nailed it. Like, she was Maria so well. So it's like it was hard to think of anyone else. Did we audition people for a possible Maria? I don't remember if we did.
Yeah, so we were at this point. We were already like. Going to the recording studio, we weren't recording mm-hmm. remotely anymore, and yeah. I remember, like, thinking, okay, well, we might, like, we cast Badger, who was local, we cast Conrad, right. who was local,
yeah.
and I remember just thinking, like, okay, well, I guess Maria, because she's going to be interacting with these actors, we should probably cast her local. But we had already casted Aniko, who plays Maria, and we were auditioning other actresses, and they were all so talented and so good. We loved their tapings, yeah. but... It wasn't the same, and I don't know.
Just thought about the other Maria.
Yeah, it was literally, we just kept on going back, and we were like, we'll just have to, you know, record her in studio when we go to Toronto or something, because that's
ultimately what worked out, yeah.
And that's what we ended up ultimately doing was, you know, I went back to Toronto, and I actually recorded some scenes with her in a studio in Toronto, so yeah. we had to just kind of improvise, but yeah, I mean, that was kind of the whole casting process with that, and... You know, all the other, like, other roles, like the reporters, some more minor roles. Those were all recorded remotely from people all around the world. We had people in China record and in Brazil mm-hmm. and, you know, reporters in different places, which was really cool. And so they sent in their recording tapes and we used it on the show.
Yeah, I'm so thankful that people took the time to do that for us. And
I know.
And they nailed it, all of them up. Fantastic work on all of that because it just gave the show so much more depth.
Totally.
Personal shout out to my friend Steve. He aced his. I loved it. And everyone else obviously in there too. Yeah. But
yeah, all the reporters were just amazing. And and they were so accommodating. Like there were some times where I would need a like last minute recording quick, you know, and mm-hmm. People were just on a flip of a dime. Send in their recordings, and yeah. I was like, this is so cool that people can record and be a part of the show from anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
The reason why we wanted to cast locally was because we wanted to have that chemistry in person, which mm-hmm. I guess we should talk about now, which is like the whole demo and recording process.
Let's get into it.
So do you remember how we did this? I mean, we recorded on Zoom, right?
Yeah, the first 2 episodes we did fully on Zoom, and we did each character individually just because of scheduling of all of this. I think we did a couple table reads all together, but nothing like fully recording because we wanted clear mics and all these other elements of scheduling happened as well. We were all in lockdown, but people were still like had lives. Like we weren't paying anyone to do any of this. So it's like we just had to work on whatever timing they had.
Totally.
And then we could focus on getting a lot more done in a session than versus everyone.
Well, I feel like that's where we came into a lot of trouble was because
we
didn't record like a typical podcast would on Zoom where all the actors were together. We had to record everyone individually, like you just said. And it was mostly me. I mean, we could have figured it out. We could have figured out the scheduling. But I was like, no, I think we should record each actor individually and get the best performance and best line off every actor, which is nuts that I thought I could do that. But, and I think you even suggested, you're like, well, can we maybe record all together? And I was like, we could. But I think, you know, I was scared of a lag on the internet, like on Zoom.
Yes.
If something lagged and then if people got cut out, I was scared of that. And it would.
And also, like, we wanted to make sure, like, the mics were sounding the same, yeah, and quality and controlling it. And I remember that was part of the
discussion. We would sit there with each actor for hours, an episode. We'd sit there for hours and we would just, like, they would redo the lines. And it was fun. Like, we were happy with it when they were doing great. And, you know, it was a good time. But
what did I say? What did I say about the editing? When
you said, good luck on editing this, because this is going to take a long time. Because, like I said, we were recording each actor's lines individually a million times to get the best performance.
Go again.
And that was kind of what we were doing. And then we did the first two episodes like that, and then what happened was I would go into the Batcave and start editing.
Yes.
And I would have about like 3 hours of footage from each actor, and I would have to, and this is what I would do. I would sit there and I would listen to Aaliyah's line, all like 10 takes of one line, and be like, okay, that's the best performance. And then I would cut that, and then I would take the same thing with Holden's lines, listen to all 10 takes or whatever, pick the best take from one line, all of them, and then start piecing them together, okay? But the problem with that was that we were recording remotely, so everybody had different backgrounds, like ambiances,
different energies. Like the flow of the tone was just all like, you could tell. Even I showed my wife, she was like, I can tell that they're not in the same room.
Yeah.
I could tell just by listening to their dialogue, you know, it's cut together.
Because we weren't feeding off of each other's energies, and we were in different spaces, and it was just it. And I worked so hard on the demos, and I think I have no regrets on that, because it really taught me. It was a practice run for not only us with the directing and the acting and recording, but also with my editing. I learned the program so well with that. You know, I got to like get my hands wet with that and really practice. And so anyway, so I ended up creating the first two episodes of the show through demos with you. I edited it all together.
Yeah.
And then I remember we were like, okay, it's good. And, you know, we were kind of in this weird limbo, and we were listening to it so many times that we kind of, I think, got numb to it. We were like, oh, it's passable. It's good. Whatever. But what changed everything was when I sent it to my friend Ashley, who is completely removed from this. She, you know, she's not in the I mean, she actually had a little role on the show, but she was not really like in the editing or the, you know, the writing. She was just a third party in this whole thing. And I sent it to her. I said, give me your honest opinion. And she said, you know, Adam, it's great. You know, the acting's good. The story's good. But I could just tell that you are all not in the same room, and that it's there's something off. And she was right.
Yeah, it's just like this undertone that was there.
Yeah.
And I could feel it too. And I was listening to it. I was like, but because I knew the reason was that we all record remotely, I was like, but there's no way around that. We can't get in the same space together. Like,
it's COVID times.
Like, we literally couldn't. Oh, half our cast is across the country.
Right, exactly.
Not half our cast, but one of our cast members was across the country, you know?
Yeah. And so, but what she said bothered me. It bothered me. Not that she was honest. I was happy that she was honest. I asked her, you know, it was good. But it bothered me that if she thought that, then that means everybody will think that they could tell. And so I remember, I'll never forget this. I was like not sleeping that night. I was just like really bothered by it. And I was like, okay, what can I do to fix this? And I sent it to so many mixing people and editing people. And everyone was like, this is not really fixable, because like everyone had different backgrounds and mics were different. Yeah. Like you just can't, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, and you're in a different room. It's hard.
Exactly. And so I kind of just woke up one morning and I was like, fuck this. We're going to go to the recording studio. I've worked way too hard with Antonio on this show. I don't want this to sound cheap or bad. And it wasn't necessarily bad sounding. It just sounded like, you know, when you hear like a demo of a song that's not fully made, that's like what it sounded like.
It was missing layers.
Yeah. So I'll never forget this. I don't know if you remember this, but I called you.
I do remember this very vividly.
I was so scared to call Antonio. You guys, you have no idea, because me and, don't forget at this point, now it's May. We've been working on this since January. And I called you, I FaceTimed you, and I said, can we talk? And you're like, yeah, what's up? And you're like, I'm like, would you mind if we scrapped everything? And you're like, Adam, what do you mean? And I was like, I want to go to the recording studio and do this professionally. And I thought you were going to be like, you know what? I'm over this. I'm done. You know?
No.
But you were like,
thank God.
You were like, thank God. Let's do this. And I was like, yeah. Boom. And again, at this point in April, May, I guess that's when it was, I guess. Things were starting to open up again, and we were able to go to the studio.
Yes, we had to do a COVID plan. I remember we had to write that up, and there was still protocols in place, and like we were safe about everything. But it was just enough window where we were able to do it in a week. We did the whole thing in 6 days, yeah. Right, in the studio.
Yeah, we recorded an episode, basically an episode a day, which was...
Yeah. Which, in hindsight, I think was exhausting for everybody. I remember eating lunch on one of the days with a lot of emotional stuff happening in episodes. And we did 2 and 3 together because we had the overlap of perspective from Declan and in the sub. So I remember that day was a very emotionally tired. I was like, even though it's possible to do it and like we did it, next project, definitely breaking it up.
Totally break it up.
Better idea.
And I mean, kudos to our actors who like kept up with the emotional... chaos of the show. The show is very chaotic, and it's like go, there's always something happening. And recording it, we were, you know, like I said, we recorded it in a full day, an episode basically, and so like there was just a lot of energy going on, and those actors kept up. They're skilled, talented actors, I'm telling you. I was very impressed by it, and it was a lot. And you know, there was a big gap in between actually recording the whole season because of just scheduling, and I think one of our actors had to go back to Toronto to film something, and you know, we had to take a little bit of a moment there, but it worked out because we had to finish off writing the show anyway.
Thank you to the demos, we learned a lot in that process, even though it was like work that was somewhat undone. We ended up keeping the Maria stuff. That was all from the demo. Her dialogue in the first three episodes, I think she was all demo dialogue.
Yeah, I think the first two, and then we re-recorded the crying scene at the end of episode 3 in the studio.
Right. That's right,
But yeah, because it was just so good, and she was just, it was so natural, and so... she just did an amazing performance on that.
We were really lucky to get the actors we did. Yeah. I have to say, they really were a big portion to the success of the show.
And I, you know, and then when also like when I decided to go to the studio with you, I had to break the news to our original Aaliyah because I was, you know, she lives in Toronto, and I was, you know, very sad about that. And so, but when I told her, she totally understood, and she was so supportive. And another problem with the demos that we were having was the cave scene in episode 2.
Yes.
The original Aaliyah, we kept on recording the scene where she was scream. And because we were recording remotely, these actors had like Blue Yeti microphones. So it wasn't like the highest quality, you know, studio mics that could handle screams. And so we kept on having problems with the peaking, and we'd try to fix things, we'd try to edit it, and there was always an issue with the cave scene. It was just a disaster, the cave scene.
Yeah, I remember the cave
scene. Oh my God, it was a mess.
The timing, and like, all timing, the energy.
Timing, because we were recording everyone separately, so we weren't having that quick in-between, like, chemistry that we have now with that scene, but at the time it was like piecing every line together. It was very hard, and the original Aaliyah, who the actress who played her, she did an amazing job, but it was the screams that would peak, and it would sound terrible, and it was so hard to fix. And when I told her that we had to, you know, recast because we were going to the studio, she of course was sad because she was so happy to be a part of this project, but she was so excited for us, and she's been so supportive of the project. And
we wouldn't have Aaliyah without her. She showed us that character in a way where when Rebecca came in and took it like over, like she set her up very nicely. We knew and understood that character arc very well by then. And
the way that the studio was set up, which I really liked, it wasn't like we were all in our own individual booths. We were all in one room, and we were able to record off of each other. And you, Antonio, were in the control room, and there was some studios have like a window and you can see the singer or the actor or whatever, but this studio didn't, and you were able to like really just focus.
I didn't know how I was going to feel about that when we first went in there, because I was so used to seeing actors perform and watching like micro expressions and the eyes. Yeah, totally film oriented. It was a blessing because then I was able to focus way more on the audio aspect of everything.
And,
just listening to like breathing rhythms and just what's happening out of the mic that I'm listening to. You know what I'm trying to say here? I'm listening to lots more of the dialogue there, and I'm hearing it in like perfect speakers. So it gave me a sense more of like the final product versus watching you guys. So, but I also, I like the the proximity to the room too was right there. So when something was feeling stuck or I wanted to shake things up, I just did the old fashioned way of coming in there with a camera and filming you guys.
Yes.
You guys on camera, like a lot of you guys are used to as video actors,
right?
As
film actors, yeah.
I should say. It kind of changed the energy, and I used it sparingly because I wanted it for moments where not necessarily there was like a bad take happening, or you know, I wanted something different. I wanted to shake up the environment a little bit, because when you're in the same space doing the same thing, it kind of all starts to bleed together sometimes. But when you can get in there and change it up with that presence, I felt like it helped a lot. And I think we used some of those tips.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it really helped us. Like sometimes, not that things were stale or like not working, but when you came in with the camera, it literally just like the spark turned on
sometimes. I remember
Samantha
said that. She's like, wow, a camera gets in here and the whole thing changes.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like something about it, just like, I guess because we're so used to being on camera as actors that we were able to just maybe brought out the better performance in us. I don't know. But those takes we usually ended up
using. Because I remember thinking in the moment that like when you're on set, there's a lot of like visual elements that help you perform. The set, the costumes, the other actors. And we had the actors, but we didn't have the set. A lot of that had to be imagined. I remember even the cave scene. I remember directing you guys to like close your eyes for a good portion of that and really try to imagine those lights and what you're seeing, because I can't show you it. Like I don't have like a digital screen to put in there. It would be cool to have like a studio with like digital walls where you can like create the space and like you're still in the space.
Gosh.
But you're, like you're in the space, but you're still in like a sound controlled environment. next project.
Could you imagine?
Yeah, right. Yeah. It helps a lot because you're trying to be the character in the moment.
Ooh.
And if you're relying heavily on the imagination for that, sometimes I just had to add a different element of environment to just get you guys in a different space physically, because like you can do the imagining, but sometimes you just need the environment. So coming in with the camera, trying different positioning, sitting, standing, obviously all helped in doing that. And then working with eyes and eye contact or no eye contact, or even I remember for one of the things of recording that we did some blocking with Badger in the FBI scene. I remember we were recording with him, and we had, I think it was you playing the FBI guy at the time, because we hadn't recorded the FBI intro yet. So you came into the room and like gave him that energy, and Conrad that energy of like a presence of people rushing the room. I remember the door was closed for the audio sake of it, but we had that blocking out there, so it was just another element to working in the
studio. I mean, I feel like it was really good to just have that kind of stuff. I mean, I remember there's times where I would be sitting instead of standing to record. I remember I'd be like physically moving. There'd be times where the sub would actually be shaking in the edit. So we would have to actually shake our bodies like this, even though we were just standing in one place, to give that illusion. So when we edit it, it sounds real. There was like little technical things like that that we had to do, which was really cool. I remember even one time when we were doing the cave scene with the little tentacles popping up in episode 2, we actually put down our phones and we put the phone, like a little screen iPad, in the middle of all of us. We would record in a circle.
Right.
And we had an iPad in the middle, and we went on like YouTube, and we found this like CGI video of this like tentacle octopus alien creature, and we played that, and we just looked at it as we were it was the scene where we were studying the octopus creature in episode 2 when we had it in the submarine, the Etholi, now that we know what it is, and we would react off of it moving. I remember that, and we would all look at this little iPad video of it. Like
I think
moving
it was
and
CGI,
stuff, and we were all like
it was CGI
reacting to it, and that was really cool, and that really helped us a lot.
Yeah, it was the whole point of us going in the studio in the first place. It's like we needed to create a space and like have actors perform in this dialogue and this story in a space, and the fact that it was a sub in itself helped a lot, because you know it was already an enclosed space. It wasn't like we were doing these big glorious vista scenes and trying to imagine being outside. I probably would have done it outside if that was the case.
Yeah.
A lot of it was in the sub. So
exactly. And I think another thing that I really liked about the whole recording process was that, you know, you were so good with this with us. You would always let us, we would always do like a take or two scripted, and you'd always tell us to then have some fun and do some improv. And that was really important for us because we got to explore and have fun with it. And like,
always,
you know, we discovered so many things while improvising and ad-libbing. And I think that was like one of the biggest.
For sure. I knew you guys had the talent to take it somewhere that I could not. So, and I always trust the actors that I'm working with to do that kind of stuff. And I want to give them the mobility to perform and become a character. And sometimes, like, as much as the words are the words, and we want to get the words for not only continuity, but like just to make sure we have the story. But if an actor is coming prepared and has this character developed, they're going to show me a part of them that I've never seen, and I want to see it.
Well,
because we can always, if it doesn't work, we cut it, you know,
totally
on either side of the line, on the written side or the improv side, you know, and sometimes putting those two together make it such a unique thing.
Yeah. And you gave us that freedom, and that was what I think brought out a lot of it. And we created a safe space where people, we could have fun and we could explore. And, you know, it was really fun to do that. And like you said, sometimes it didn't work and sometimes it did. And then, you know, the times it didn't work, we just laughed at the bloopers of it. And then sometimes we got some really, really like brilliant performances from it, you know, and it led to other things and other ideas, which was really cool.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So let's talk about the editing portion of the show. I edited some of
all of the show. What do you mean? A lot of the show. You edited the entire.
Okay, but you helped too in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because of you, like, I was so organized. You would have a list of takes of the ones that we liked, and you would circle the ones that were
circle
good.
Circle the like, best take... ones, do my my note-taking, and, like, truthfully, what a scripty would do on the day for me, I would be like, yeah, I like that one, circle that one, or we'll use this part of this one, and they track all that. But it was actually nicer to be in the moment writing it myself and just remembering, okay, I know what this take was when I'm looking back at it and how it will piece together, and giving you all those notes on the editing room.
Yeah, you gave me all those notes. And so like how it would work would be like, okay, scene one, Antonio liked take 3, 4, and 8, and he would circle the 8th one or whatever it was, the best take. And that's kind of what I would work off of. And thank God for that, because it really helped me be organized when it came to editing, you know. And almost every single take that I used, Antonio, was the exact same one that you circled or that you liked.
Yes, we were really in sync, and I've never worked with someone where, like, literally as I'm typing a message, they're typing the same one back to me. We had no discrepancies on like any choices. Everything was for the purpose of the story and performance of the characters in it, and we linked so well with it. I was really inspired by
we
that.
Really did. And you know, sometimes though I would be a little crazy and say the most absurd idea for the story.
No,
and,
but that's
you
a
know.
Part of the creation though. No, but that was part of the creation process, and I always like that you did that. You had this expansive mind, and you went off on tangents, and like you had these parts of like the story that I never really thought of, and it gave it the deep layer. Even if it never made it to like recording, it gave the layer of the character for sure.
Well, I just figured, if, you know, maybe we can go like to the most extreme and then sometimes pull back and meet in the middle, or maybe sometimes it doesn't work at all. But it was fun to just kind of like bounce ideas off with you and just have like the craziest, like, I don't know, just like fun times, just like discussing of where we can go. It's sci-fi, you know, we can go anywhere, we can do anything. And, you know, with audio dramas, you can really do anything. There's, you know, you don't need a bajillion dollar camera crew and, you know, build this huge elaborate set. It's all audio. So you can go anywhere. And that's what the fun part of the editing was for me. You know, I was able to just create and create and create and design any room or any experience or spaceship or underwater or submarine or headquarters. I could do anything.
Yeah.
And it was the best experience ever. I basically, what happened for me was I guess, you know, I can get into the story of the editing was for me, it was very much like I just gotten back home from Toronto, and I decided to go right into town in the editing, and I just like locked myself away. I just literally didn't speak to anybody for like 2 months, and I just worked. How it would go would be like, I would wake up and I would, you know, edit the show from probably like 9 a.m. to about 10 p.m. at night, sometimes longer. And I would do that every single day. And a typical day would consist about 2 scenes. If the scene is very long and very dramatic and there's a lot going on, maybe 1 scene a day. But the reason why I did that was important for me because I wanted to take my time with it. I didn't want to just slap, you know, a few takes in and then call it a day. I wanted it to be very detailed. I wanted to have the little nuances in it that you enjoy when you're listening to an audio drama, you know. I wanted that like experience and that perfection. The problem with the perfectionist is that, you know, time and perfection were like working against each other a lot of the time. Like, I didn't have time to finish certain things, or I wish I had more time to do this or that. But, you know, I had to let things go and be okay with certain things. And that's where you would come in. You'd be like, okay, this is good, or like we can move on from this, or you know, we called it virgin ears. You would listen to the scene that I would send you, and you'd be like, okay, you know, with virgin ears, and you'd be like, I spot this or I spot that, because I had been working on the scene all day, and so little things like certain things I wouldn't notice
you need that third perspective, because once you're too close to the work, it's hard to see it for what it is from like a, yeah, like you said, virgin ears or a neutral perspective. And I was happy that I wasn't in the editing room for that very reason. It's because, like, if I was there with you, basically over the shoulder editing with you, like, it would have tainted my perspective as well, because I'm watching you cut it together. But because that we were doing this all remotely again, it kind of helped out that we were able to hear it this way.
I just remember, like, you know, it was the hardest part about the whole editing process was finding the right performance takes. Because what would happen is I would get, you know, in a scene, I'd get like maybe 4 or 5 takes, and each actor, like, I would listen to all the takes and then compare to your notes, Antonio, and be like, okay, he liked take 5 or whatever. And most of the time, like I said, I always agreed with you. Right. So I would use that as like the main take. But then there'd be sometimes like maybe one actor muffled or another line from another take was better performed from the actor. So I would go in and start cutting each piece of every, like different takes, not too much, because again, I want to flow and have it more natural. Like, that's the reason why we went to the studio in the first place. But I wanted every actor to shine and have their best performance. And if I could make it better, I did that, you know? And so that was very tedious for me, because I had to like make sure that everyone editing, sounded their best.
Yeah. No, and we do that in film all the time too. We all use a cut from a different side and, you know, the back of someone's head on this one because it was a better take and just for reactions or whatever. It's editing.
So that
was
hard. And then once that was done, once I built that, the room, vocal performance, the rest kind of was a little easier. I started building the ambiance, which is like, you know, the wherever they were at, either underwater or in the sub or at headquarters or whatever. And then on top of that, I would build the sound effects, which were, you know, footsteps or, you know, a door opening or whatever. And that was, you know, what's so funny? The hardest sound effect to find was footsteps. There was never just a basic footstep walking from left to right ear. It was very much like one dimensional or like in snow or in mud or whatever. It was the hardest like thing to find. I had to like manually make it from like left to right in like the editing. So that was like the hardest, believe it or not, sound effect to find. I could find any sci-fi thing if I wanted to, but a footstep was very difficult for me to find.
Hey, you're a perfectionist. It takes as long as it's got to take.
I know, but it was so annoying.
I'm like that too, though. It's all good. I totally sympathize with it. I remember plenty of times where going over the same footage, same thing. Mm-hmm. I sympathize with the whole process. That's why I vividly remember the demos, and I was like, oh my god, I'm in for a nightmare. Take 30. Oh no.
I know, in the studio we did like 5 or 6 takes max for a scene, so
yes. And we nailed it, because for all the elements that we've been talking about, the presence was everything, right. And yeah, I know that the editing process can be tough sometimes.
Yeah, it was tedious, the vocal cuts, but you know, that was, again, I was very particular, and I wanted each actor to have their moment and the best moment of the scene. I didn't want I didn't want to just be lazy and slap it together. It's good enough. That's not what I wanted. Yeah. I wanted it to be very, took my time, like a film. So once all that was completed, you know, I now have this whole scene. I have the vocal performance, I have the ambiance, and I have the sound effects that were in place. And again, timing is everything, you know? So sometimes, like, maybe the actor didn't have a specific dramatic beat and I wanted it, I was able to cut that in editing and like make that dramatic beat, which was really cool and fun for me to do. And sound effects were placed at specific times. So once I have this whole scene built, then it was time to add the music. And we had some the most beautiful musicians that we got to work with. Lee Rosevear, Daniel Birch, Kai Engel, and Kios. Those were our 4 main musicians. We used other people too, but those were our main guys. God, and
some of the best songs, like so suitable for the scene. It was incredible. The timing was so perfect a lot of the times. I remember hearing that too. I was like, did you edit this part? Or like, is this like just done like this? Like the crescendo was perfect.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like it got scored for the actual scene, because usually you do the scene, you record it, and then the composers come in and they compose for this what's on the picture or on the recording, and this is like reverse, but it worked.
I mean sometimes I would have to cut some songs into different parts and stuff to make it match, but you know, most of the time it just lined up perfectly. But truthfully, I think the hardest part of the entire editing process was the perfectionist in me, because it would bother me if something wasn't like like fixable or wasn't right or whatever. I couldn't just move on from that. It was hard for me to like be okay with it. And I had to like learn to, like, by episode 5, I got to the point where I'm like, okay, this is good enough. I don't have time. I need to move on to bigger things in this episode. You know, I couldn't be worrying about the little nuances here and there anymore, you know? And I mean, I made sure it was done well, but I couldn't be obsessing over it like I did with episode 1, scene 1, you know, my first project.
It's never gonna
be perfect. I think naturally,
never ever.
Yeah, it's
ever.
Never gonna be perfect. Nope. And I think that that's just kind of like what comes
it's
with
art, man. You know, got it. It's art. You got to get to the best that it can be. I feel like the perfectionist in you and me are there for a reason. We don't want any sloppy mistakes or, you know, easy fixes.
Right.
And I'm glad that you took the time that you did in watching that in the editing room. And I was grateful for that. And I felt really guilty a lot of the time editing wise, because I knew how much of the workload was on you and the time frames that we had to get it done. So but I'm grateful that you got it done. Needless to say.
Thank you. No, I mean, I just really wanted to take this challenge on. I was in quarantine. I said, why not learn how to edit and do a show? Like, this is the perfect time. So don't feel guilty. I really just, this is what I wanted to do. And like I said, it passed the quarantine like no tomorrow.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so let's move on to the next section of the show, which is the marketing and the release. Yeah. The whole plan of that. We would go on back and forth for months, Antonio and I, and asking so many people. I even put a poll in the summer. People probably had no idea what the context was. Like, I think I put like the poll was like, would you rather binge your podcasts or have them out weekly? But the whole conversation was binge or weekly release, and we kept on asking everybody, and we were not sure what the hell to do.
I was on team binge in the beginning. I was on team binge because it's just nice to binge. It's nice to be immersed and just get the next episode until the end, and then you know how it ends, and then you can move on with your life. And I felt like also we had the discussion about like how we're going to promote this and get this word out, and we felt like this all at once marketing strategy was for the best, and a slow burn might peter out and by episode 3 or 4 if people were not interested, which is fair and probably true. I don't know what would have happened the other way, but in the end, honestly, I'm glad it went this way. It gave someone something to look forward to. People, like, you know, would listen to it on their commute. They knew Wednesday morning or Wednesday or Thursday morning, whatever, wherever they were, they were going to get an episode to listen to. And it was new and it only came out now and everyone was listening to it at the same time, so no one could spoil it if anyone was listening later. I remember that was a big discussion with our descriptions too. It's like, we don't want to give too much of the story away because you never know when someone's listening to it. But ultimately, I am glad that we ended up doing the weekly releases the way we did. Just for this story particularly.
Yeah, I mean, I think we wrote it in terms of a weekly release. Like, that was kind of like how we had cliffhangers and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, I'm happy we did a weekly release too, because, you know, we live in a TikTok world where, you know, things come and go so fast, and you are just constantly bombarded with content and content and content. Yep. And if you put everything all out at once, we could have been forgotten about within a week. You know, it's all there, and then there's nothing else to promote. It's just ready there.
Yeah, you wouldn't even bother subscribing. Because you just listen to all of them and then peace out, you know?
Yeah.
But, and not to, like, and having an audience that follows a show is good for lots of reasons, too. It's this, like you said, this span of time that you're invested in this story. And I've actually seen a lot of streaming services now go back to that same old model of we release it on a certain day at this certain time of the week. And it kind of creates like that ritual of listening to this story together. And I like that personally as like, yeah, on Wednesdays at this time, I'm listening to Cascadia or I'm watching Gemstones or something, you know, another show. And I know that it comes out at this time.
I mean, I don't think there's any right or wrong way to release it. It's just like, I guess, a style of doing it. But, you know, what's really cool now is that, you know, even though we did the weekly release, people can still now binge the show.
They can binge it then.
People are
going
to find our show in a month or two.
They'll get to binge eventually.
You know, and they'll be able to binge it. It's the best of both worlds.
I think that's like well said. It's the best of both worlds to do the weekly releases for that very reason.
But ultimately, you know, the reason why we ended up going with the weekly release was actually we had no choice. A situation happened where we had to get the show out on a certain day, we had to release it on a certain day or else it was not going to happen. I can't get into details about it, but it was a now or never situation. And, you know, it was very frustrating because we had this whole plan, like, Antonio said, of a release, and you know, we were going to do visuals and all these things, but you know, unfortunately the situation we found ourselves in left us no choice. Luckily we had 3 episodes already edited, so we weren't too stressed, but it was still stressful. I mean, I didn't want to have myself editing every week and feeling that pressure of getting it out every single week. I wanted it all to be done and then enjoy the release process, but I had to get, you know, it was loosely edited, mm-hmm. like the first draft. So I still had to like edit every single week. Yeah. In hindsight, that did help because I literally just shut off my phone and my mm-hmm. life. And I just sat down and I just edited every single day, like I explained earlier.
Yes.
And it was fine. But
yeah, that's basically when you locked yourself in the back cave.
Anyway, at the end of the day, it's fine. Yeah. We were gearing up to release the show. Nobody had known about it except for our close friends and family. So there was not pressure from like people mm-hmm. wanting the show.
None.
It was just more so that there was a competitor kind of show that had a similar storyline. And we were like, okay, we need to get it out because it'll look bad if we come out after them. So anyway, we ended up just kind of scrambling and getting the trailer ready. And then we just dropped it. Yep. And then
I remember that.
A day after we dropped the trailer, my grandpa passed away.
Yeah.
And I was like obviously so distraught and sad about it. And I wasn't sure if we should push the show or just maybe like wait until 6 or 7 months and release the show then. I wasn't really sure what to do, but you know, we had all these people working on the show with us, and my grandpa is like a showman. Like, he was in show business, and I knew that he would have wanted the show out, and I just dedicated the whole show to him basically. And so that was kind of stressful. And so we put out the show, and you know, I was literally going to the funeral the day of the release, and it was very like a lot, but at the end of the day, like, I think that everything happens for a reason. And because we had no choice but to put out the show, it forced me to like really hunker down and get it done. You know,
I was ready to take over editing for you, because I was like, if you need the time, like, do it, please. Don't hesitate. Like, it's family first, you know?
Yeah.
And I understand where the position is. I'll do my best to get at least part of it done. But you're like, you made it happen. You made it happen under all the circumstances of the past month. COVID, all this other stuff in the background, you just pushed through with, I'm editing, baby.
Yeah, basically. I was like, fight or flight, let's go. You know, it was very important to me. This whole, we worked on the show for a year. I wasn't gonna, you know, let a competitor show, you know, take that spotlight when we were working so hard on it. And so anyway, so in the end, I ended up just going to town and literally, like I said, turning everything off and just focusing for like 2 months. I didn't go out. I didn't leave my house. And it was just that. And so, you know, and again, the other thing is like, you know, when you're editing and you're so in the thick of all this, this whole thing, you don't know how it's going to be perceived or if people are even going to listen or like it. I remember I was doing the final touches on episode 4, and I had been working till like 5 a.m. on the show, and I was so tired. I just, you know, finally was done the episode, and I uploaded it, released it, and I went right to bed. And, you know, the next morning you wake up. Well, I wake up. I always check the downloads and see how, you know, how we're doing, how the episode's doing, whatever. And I saw that so many people, like, our downloads exploded. And I was like, okay, that's weird. And I didn't know where it was coming from. Like our hosting page doesn't tell us. It just tells you, like, your download statistics and stuff. So I'm like, okay, that's really weird. But I didn't really think anything of it. I was just like, maybe I don't know. I wasn't really thinking much about it. And then a few hours later, like, it hit me that we were getting this, like, crazy amount of downloads per episode. And every time I refreshed the page, we were getting, like hundreds and hundreds of downloads. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I couldn't figure it out. There was no way to figure it out. And so I went on Apple, I went on Spotify, and there was nothing going on. So I was like, what the hell? And then I checked my Instagram like request messages and saw this like random account DM me say, hey, just so you know, like, Spotify has featured you guys on their homepage as Best New Fiction. And I was like, what? And I went on Spotify and I couldn't see it. But it was because we were featured on the U.S. Spotify. So each country has a different Spotify. And so that's where it was coming from.
The app is different up here. Yeah, they feature different things that are more relevant to the area you're in. So it's like...
Yeah.
That was wild. I knew the show at this point. I knew the show was doing fairly well, but I had no inclination of where the show would go, even from the beginning. So to see that, I'm still kind of thinking, like, did that actually happen? Really, like, top fiction podcast? Like, we were in the first front page of that. That was insane. Out of all the genres beyond sci-fi, like, there's a lot of fiction podcasts happening right now, and for us to get there on just the merit of our fandom alone and social and people talking about the show and actually listening to it, it's just like, couldn't have asked for a better feature.
It was really cool, and I feel like it felt like, you know, I'm not a singer, but like, if I was a singer, what it would feel like to have your song on the radio for the first time. I feel like that's what that feeling was. We were like freaking out, and it was, you know, all my friends were freaking out, and it was so cool to have that. It was like a full circle moment for us, because I feel like I said, we worked so hard on it, and now to be recognized by Spotify, it was the best feeling ever.
Yeah, I still have no idea the final number, and I like that personally for myself, that I don't know how many people have listened.
Yes.
It helps me in recording this interview right now.
Yeah, Antonio doesn't want to know. He doesn't want to know.
And how many people might be listening to this.
Yeah. Stage fright. You're behind the camera. Another part of our marketing plan was to have like some kind of visual element to all of this, to the release and to, you know, build up.
Yeah, there was a few discussions on what we should do with that. Photo shoots, trailers, possibly even an animated aspect to the whole supercut.
Yep.
And we ran out of time.
Like I said, we were put in that position where we had no choice but to release it.
That's right. So,
you know, in the end, it worked out because I think
we had the title card. We had that poster.
Yeah, done. We did. We had it over a year. But yeah. I think in the end, it worked out because people got to use their imagination. And we didn't really taint them with what we actually look like. They got to imagine what Declan and Iris and Holden looked like, you know? But what we did do was, like, we did do weekly little visuals. So we had, like, different, like video promos. Yeah. If you don't follow us on Instagram, you can go on 911 podcasts and you can see visuals we had for each week that kind of related to the show. Exactly. And that's kind of something that we did. And also photos and stuff.
I ended up going to a museum during the third episode release, and I was like, ooh, a submarine.
Yes, yes.
Took some video for a reel to overlay with the part of the episode, a POV reel, which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Took a lot of time, but I did.
Yeah. Do you have any like fun memories of recording or the entire process? Like what are some good memories that stick out to you? Your best memory?
Personally, I really found working with Kevin Adamski fun, the guy that plays Ozzo.
Yes.
Because I remember we totally missed this in the about casting, and maybe we can relay this. When we were casting Ozzo, like I instinctively knew Kevin was the guy. Like we did not hold auditions for Ozzo.
Nope.
There was no, I felt like, I was like, Adam, please, this is the guy for Ozzo. His voice is uncannily perfect for the translator and the persona of Ozzo. And he knocked it out of the park.
He totally did. He was so fun to work with. He is so talented. Yes.
And I think if of all the memories of the recording and the writing and everything, the best memories have been working with you, man. Honestly, I don't mean to say that in the cheesiest way, but I've worked with maybe not so great collaborators in the past, and you were certainly in the better books of all the collaborators I've worked with before. And it was special because I like that we connect on a lot of things, just brain synergy wise, writing wise, even in performances. Even though you were hating a lot of the stuff that you were doing for yourself, like I do for myself, self-deprecating to the end. We were able to get through a lot of stuff.
We were
pretty much unscathed, you know. And I think that that's an important thing to be grateful for.
Yeah, and not to be corny, same thing with you. You know, I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better first person to do a project with than you. You know, you really took the reins and showed me how it went and how it goes. And obviously audio is our, we're both new to audio, but like we learned together and we did it.
We did the damn thing. Team player at the end of the day. It's a team effort, and I have a part to play. So do you, and so does everybody involved. And it's all vital parts, because without someone it's missing.
Totally.
You know what I mean? But I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it, and I want to do so many more.
Because
it's so fun.
We have so much coming up. I'm so excited to jump in 2020 with you, 2022 with you. I think one of my favorite memories of the whole process was probably on day one of recording. We had just finished recording.
Oh my God, I haven't been-
and We just finished episode one. Yeah. It was our first day of recording, and I come home and I'm so tired because, like we've said earlier, a whole day of recording, it's a lot of energy. We're screaming and freaking out, and this is happening, and this attack, and that, and it's crazy. It's hectic, and a lot of energy drained. So I come home, and like I said earlier, when I'm in my recording process, I'm trying to be in the recording process. I'm not trying to focus on acting or editing or anything like that. I just want to. Mm-hmm. If I was in the writing process, I just want to focus on the writing process. So my rule was that I didn't want to edit while we were recording. I wanted to just focus on the recording and the acting. But when I got home that night from the first day of recording, I was so excited to just listen to. I wanted to hear some of the takes. We just had gone to the professional recording studio. We had been working on this for 6 months. I was just so excited. So I pop in my hard drive into the computer, and I'll never forget this. Yeah. It was empty. And I was like, and it was like 9 p.m. at night. I call Antonio frantic in like erratic, crazy behavior. I'm like, Antonio, the recordings aren't there. And like, you were just like, they're probably there. Recording guy, Andrew, probably has it. And you were trying to keep calm, but I could tell you were a little nervous. It was our first day, so we didn't know our sound engineer, Andrew, that well.
I was pretty confident he had saved it, but I was like, well, what if he doesn't? There was this little inkling of like, what if he didn't? And he wasn't responding because he was asleep. So I was like, we're just going to have to find out.
Exactly. And so I had told some of the actors, I was like, oh my God, we might have to re-record episode one. Maybe he deleted it from his computer to save space on his computer. Like, why would he save all these takes? Like, I don't know. So the next day, like Antonio and I, Antonio picks me up and we go to the studio, and the actors are there before us and they're sitting on the couch. I'll never forget it. I walk in and they all look at me and they're like, Adam, we're sorry. The recordings weren't saved. And I just saw right through them, and I was like, you guys are fucking lying. And they were lying, thank God. He had saved them on the computer.
I remember that heart attack moment for sure.
Okay, so we put a little Q&A out today on our Instagram stories asking if anyone had any questions of the production of the show, and we got some answers. So we're going to dive right in. Yeah. Our first question is, how long does it take to record an episode? And that's from Teddy. We kind of answered that already.
I'll just rehash it for him. Basically we recorded an episode a day. Was pretty much the stasis of what mm-hmm. the time we had to work with. Like, the schedule didn't allow it for this project to work more than less, or less than that. So we were doing roughly 20 pages a day, which is a gross amount of just performance level in general. But because we had such amazing actors, we were able to pull it off.
I mean, we really just like would rehearse a lot before the studio and just like practice the night before and whatever, and then come in and have time to play and rehearse, and then we would record. And sometimes we actually had extra time in the day. Sometimes we got through it mm-hmm. really fast. So
break for lunch early or something exactly. Just to like recoup ourselves. Yeah.
So sometimes it was not as bad grueling as we keep saying. It was very chill. Okay, so the next question is, you guys make it look so easy. Is it easy? Do you ever feel stressed, and how do you deal with it? And that's from Marcus.
That's you. That's you for sure.
Well, I mean, I guess like, I don't know. I mean, I felt the pressure after the Spotify push, because I was like, oh fuck, now people are actually listening. And like, I was editing every week for an episode, so like, I felt that pressure, but I didn't really let it get to me. It was more so just like hitting the deadlines. Like, I want to make sure that the episode was out every week and I wasn't like a day late or whatever. That was kind of like the only pressure. But as far as like listeners or people's like perspective on things, I didn't really tune into that. I was so busy working on the show. I would upload an episode, and the next day I would just get right back to work on the next episode. So I wasn't even taking in what people were saying, which was, I think, the best way that I could have done that. How about you?
I've just been your cheerleader. I was like, I have my channeling of the pressure has just been to root Adam on as much as I can and support him, because literally has all the edit in his hands.
Okay, so this next question comes from Jesse, and he says, did you guys all record your parts separately or together? I guess we kind of answered this already as well.
Mostly Maria was the most separated of them all. All the dive team stuff was generally together. If Adam wasn't in the scene, he was in the engineer room with me, and vice versa. People were just listening in.
Okay, so the next question comes from Rebecca, and she asks, have you written season 2 yet? Antonio, you don't even know this yet, but I have drafted the first episode of season 2.
This guy. I was going to say, we have an idea how to start it. literally what I was going to say. I mean, like, we have an idea how to start it.
Nope, the episode's already drafted.
Okay, I'm excited. Then that means we have started the process.
I'm excited. I want you to listen to it. Two. I want you to read it, and I want you to obviously we're gonna. It's very loose. It's very loosely written, but we have.
I've been revving to go. I'm really excited to do it. But Cascadia season 2 coming soon to a podcast near you.
Allegedly,
no promises.
Well, we want to write it and see if where it goes. Like, I mean, I don't want to say where it's 100% yet. And I think the way that we ended season 1, it's good because it could. If we don't end up doing a season 2, then it's a great ending. And yeah. If we do end up going to season 2, then we set ourselves up for a season 2, which is really cool. So, I have a lot of ideas, and I think we're definitely gonna run with it. But we have to write and see where it goes, and if it's even good, you know.
Stay tuned.
Anyways, next question is from Matt, and he asks, did the voice actors know how the story would go, or were they surprised?
A lot of the actors chose not to read on past certain episodes. I remember Lee specifically was like, I don't want to know how it ends. Mm-hmm. He knew the first two because he was in the demos.
Hold on.
But he read 3, and that's where he decided, he's like, I'm not going to read on past this because I'm really feeling the character. And because we recorded this whole thing linearly in timeline, whereas in film, if you don't know, sometimes they record different parts of the movie at different times based on locations and settings. With recording and audio, you can just do it in the time that the story happens in that same timeline. And a lot of the characters got polished out that way. So I think he really buckled down with that mentality and was like, I'm just going to experience it with Holden and watch it unfold day by day.
And it was so cool because it really did unfold and they really did
bring have it organically happen
as they
for
were
them.
Going. And they were shocked when they were reading things. They're like, wait, what? This is happening? So it was really cool to see that happen. Okay, so the next question comes from Jake, and he asks, how does it feel now that it's over? What do you feel?
It's satisfying, but I'm trying not to get caught up in that satisfaction. I'm still, like, now ready for season 2 to start writing that and for the next show that we do together and, like, just doing more of this because it's just been such a positive experience and I just want to channel, like, that feeling into making more, you know, and hopefully going better in a, you know, brighter direction here on out.
I feel like when you binge a TV show and you watch a full season or series and then it's over and you're like, what do I do with myself?
Yeah.
I feel the same way, but on the other end, I'm like, what do I do with myself? The show's over. I've been spending all this time editing and now I'm like, I have nothing to do. Like, I'm like, so that's just, it's a weird feeling like
withdrawal.
That, but like a withdrawal. Like, I don't know. So, but I'm happy and I'm excited to just take a moment to process it all because it happened so fast. And now I'm like going to just take a moment and just breathe and, you know, enjoy the people's reactions and stuff. Okay. The next question comes from Zaina and she says, were you nervous to put it out? I guess, meaning releasing the show.
I was personally proud of it, so not so much. I knew it was going to be received fairly well, not to toot our own horn here about it. I knew that the timing of it, like we discussed, was a little bit the only kind of curveball in the whole thing. It's like, okay, did we give it enough time to be where it's at? Like we were saying, is it good enough? Like, did we reach that point? But in the end, I was okay. I was okay with whatever happened. I knew we poured our heart and soul into it, and we did the best that we could. So whatever the outcome, we are either going to learn from it or be thankful for it. Either way.
I was shitting bricks. I was so nervous. Yeah. It was like, you know, this is my first project ever. So it was so nerve-wracking to put something that we were holding on to for over a year and like working on in secret. Like nobody knew about this. And then just have it out into the world. You know, what was ours for so long is now everybody's. And it's like, it was scary and, you know, it is what it is. But then when the situation happened that we had no choice but to put it out, where there was another show that was very similar to ours, I didn't even think. I was like, all right, fight or flight again. You know, we got to put it out now. So I didn't even have time to think about it. And then every week after that, I just have to work on the show to get it out. So
the show goes on.
By time, you know, and then once I started to see that it was getting good reviews and stuff, I was like, okay, I'm okay. I'm not so scared anymore. Yeah. All right, and the next question comes from Chris. What was the most daunting aspect of starting a fictional podcast?
In this particular project, it was just for the most daunting thing was just adapting to the medium for me, at least, was like, okay, I have to remember I can't show this visually. So, and how to not be so over-explanatory in dialogue and ride that line of like, how do I paint a picture without painting the picture, you know, with only sound and people talking and blocking and energy, right? And a lot of it, for me at least, came in trust in that the audience will do that, a lot of that work for themselves.
Yeah.
And if I just give them the framework, or we give them the framework of a good story, good characters, and good setting, they'll be able to fill those parts in and make it their own, like you were saying earlier.
Totally.
Yeah, I didn't want to spoon feed them the setting or the dialogue or the story.
It was important that we believed and we trusted that the audience was smart enough to fill in the blanks, like you said, you know? And we relied a lot on sound effects and, you know, different things like that, where it's like, okay, we don't need to say that they're going to the fridge to get this water bottle. We could just open, have a sound effect of opening a fridge and getting the water bottle. So, you know, it was that kind of like learning of the medium. Okay, so this question comes from Jamie, and he asks, what films and TV shows inspired you to write this story?
Well, I got the story handed to me in a way where it approached me. But in the same vein of this question, I do want to say I purposely did not watch any deep sea exploration footage, videos, stories, none of it. I didn't want it to taint the writing process of the finishing of it or the elements of what happens underwater. Like, I obviously did the research that was required. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of trusted that I wasn't copying, and we weren't copying anyone. Yes, you know what I mean? It's like, I hope not. But if I start watching and going down that rabbit hole, it's going to taint the whole experience.
Well, for me, I like I said earlier, I was inspired by that Instagram photo that literally just had the deep sea diver with, you know, at the bottom of the ocean that said alone on the caption of it. So that really inspired me. It's so interesting how like a photo can inspire everything, or like, you know, a piece of music or whatever. But Once we started getting into the thick of writing and stuff, I actually started to watch, or I watched The Abyss, which was like the 80s iconic movie, just for, you know, inspiration. I know it's very different, but like just for inspiration and just like technical things. And then I also watched the show called Away on Netflix. It's a space show, but it still gave me that inspiration of like the crew and the dynamics and things like that. And just being, you know, space and underwater are very similar in a lot of ways. Yeah. So that kind of gave me the inspiration of creating that. But I mean, again, it was just more just our show is so unique that it didn't really have any kind of impact on it. I just wanted to have some kind of like,
I don't remember having like a mood board or anything for this one particularly, in terms of like, oh, because like usually you in film you'd create like some sort of mood, some sort of tone, and you'd take inspiration from like film grabs, pictures, any sort of media content, and slap it to like a mood board. But this one was all in the mind. It's like, okay, how do we get these? The music was one of the first things we kind of got locked down to get like this energy flowing through.
Writing the script, listening to the music that we were going to write. So usually it's the opposite. They score once, you know, the scene's ready. But I was actually doing the opposite. I was writing while listening to the music that we were going to use. So that really helped me a lot. And just getting mentally in it, I saw everything. I visualized everything. And I think that also helped with everything in the end, was if I was able to visualize the scene and I could see everything play out, then other people would be able to too as well. All right, well, that's it. Thank you, everybody, so much for coming along on this crazy, crazy ride with us. We hope you enjoyed the show. And keep in touch. Follow us on Instagram at 911 Podcasts and on Twitter, 911_podcasts. And my personal Instagram is Adam Murciano, MURCIANO. Antonio, what's yours?
And mine's Antonio Score. So Antonio and Score.
Stay subscribed, because we are going to be posting on this feed for updates on season 2 and trailers for other shows that we end up doing. So stay connected with us.
We'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you guys so much for listening. I appreciate each and every one of you. I truly do mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you so much, you guys. Talk soon. Bye.